At InDigital, we know that public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
Here in Greenville County, we have 8 different places where a 911 call can be answered.
It is the largest county in South Carolina. It's a challenge.
The type of information that a telecommunicator gets from Radius Plus is location-based technology. You can see where the caller is, if they have a medical issue, if they speak a different language. They're immediately able to text to that caller in their native language. It reduces response time because it immediately gets first responders where they need to be.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, open your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the 3 A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital, as well as Rapid Deploy and Carbyne. And as always, a big shout out to patrons. Thank you so, so very much for everything, and especially all of you who are here watching, listening, supporting, sharing, all of it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it more than you know. And I think this is going to be like the second episode now, already at the first of the year, 2022. Man, it's going to go by fast, I feel like. I don't know why. Probably because I was looking at the calendar and seeing a bunch of different episodes that are going to be coming up, just events, conferences that I'll be involved in. So I feel like it's going to go pretty fast. But you get the benefit of all of these amazing and powerful stories here on Within the Trenches podcast, but as well as the DRT, the Dispatchers Roundtable, and of course, Open Mic Live. So there's a lot that's going to be coming up, so make sure to stay tuned. Very excited about that. And new content, of course, coming for patrons, and a perk for patrons only, our audio versions of the DRT as well as Open Mic. Open Mic Live is done every single Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Facebook, Twitter, as well as YouTube, and occasionally on Instagram as well. And we take an hour out of our day to forget about the bullshit that's going on in the world, and we share the lighter side of dispatch. We talk about the funny shit that happens, and some of those stories are pretty hilarious, especially when my mom is in the audience, and then it's almost like a competition to see who can give me the more raunchy call in the comments, because I read them out loud the way they're written. And if my mom is in there, like I said, it's like a competition to see who can give me the most raunchy one for me to read and be all embarrassed and stuff, and my face gets all red because my mom is there. So that's, again, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern time, and that's on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. So check out Open Mic. And then, as I was talking about patrons, they get an audio version of that every single time that airs. So stay tuned for all of that stuff. And today my guest is Rachel Hine, and she is the ECRC supervisor at Intrado. She's got about 17 years total in public safety, but in dispatch 11 years, and we're going to find out a lot more about Rachel here. Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Excellent. Well, I am excited to have you here. You had sent in an email and kind of give a brief summary of you as well as the ECRC, and I want to learn more, and especially for all those who are listening and watching right now as well. So just to start out, you know, how did you get involved in dispatching to begin with? Do you come from a public safety background, like family and all, or you just jump in like I did, green, with nobody in public safety?
Well, I grew up in a law enforcement family. My dad was an officer, and my mom started out, she was a dispatcher for 10 years. Oh. And she was pregnant with me when she was a dispatcher, so I like to think I have advanced training.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Definitely got into the blood quick then.
Exactly. So, and she eventually became a background investigator and all these different jobs within law enforcement. And after high school, I got a job as a cadet with the local sheriff's department in Southern California, where I grew up, and did that for a few years, wrote parking tickets, and then transferred to the aviation unit, which was just an amazing opportunity. Get to fly around in helicopters, and they give me flying lessons every once in a while, but, you know, depression.
That's awesome.
And, you know, awesome. I was young and naive and got married at 19 to my high school sweetheart and needed to make more than $7 an hour as a cadet. So my family really encouraged me to try dispatching because, you know, that was a big bump to $12 an hour. Mm-hmm. So applied for that, got the job, and worked for the sheriff's department for a year dispatching law enforcement, and then moved out to Colorado and did police, fire, and EMS dispatch for another 10 years.
Wow. So then growing up, seeing how, you know, your mom was pregnant with you during the time that she was working and all, you know, growing up from there, you know, did you ever hear stories, or did you get a chance to listen to the radio, or even go into dispatch or anything like that to, you know, continue building that, you know, curiosity and want to, I guess, kind of go into that direction that you ended up going into?
Yeah, I always thought I'd end up as a police officer, and I went through the academy, and it just didn't work out that way. I fell in love with dispatching, and you know, I heard calls growing up, and I learned 10 code and phonetics as a kid because my parents would try to talk to each other without the kids knowing what they were saying and do things in 10 code and phonetics. And we all figured out what they were saying real easy. So knew that growing up. And, you know, every once in a while, my dad would bring home a recording from a funny call that happened, like a deputy being chased by a bear through the orange orchards or something, you know, some really amazing stories.
So, oh, that is great.
Yeah. And I started actually working in middle school at my mom's agency, trying to keep me out of trouble. And so she put me to work, and I'd work in the evidence room or help out with the DARE program, or they just put me to work after school every day somewhere in the department.
Oh, man. Yeah. So you definitely started out early then, and just listening and interacting, just the engagement that is, you know, of law enforcement and dispatching and listening to different calls and hearing about stories and stuff. And so at what point, because you said you ended up falling in love with dispatch. Mm-hmm. So do you remember what it was, you know, that kind of, you know, brought you to that point? Was that like right before you started, right when you got into it? You know, was there a certain call or an incident that happened? What was it that, you know, it was just, you knew that it was for you?
I think it took me a little bit. I just remember my first year just being so nerve-wracking. So it was a busy agency. It was 800 deputies at the time for the agency that I first worked at.
Oh, wow.
And I really don't remember my training there. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of blocked that out a little bit. I mean, the first call I remember was working radio. We divided the county in half, East County, West County, and getting a bank robbery that was close to the line, and deputies coming from all over to jump in on this bank robbery in progress, and just the chaos of it. And I was so hyper focused on the call that my dad was in the building and came down and was standing in front of my console the whole time I was handling this call, and I never saw him.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yeah, just craziness. But I think as I got more comfortable with it and got the experience, I love behind the scenes things. It's what I love about Entrato. It's what I loved about 911, is seeing everything that's going on and knowing things that maybe other people don't know of what's happening in the city or the county. So being able to help people and be the calm in the storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have to ask, because you mentioned what you were making at the time, mm-hmm. and then to go into dispatch, it was a bump up to like $12. So what year was this?
1999, I started dispatching
at 20 years old. Oh, it was 99. Mm-hmm. So I started in 2001, and I was 19. I was 19, it was 2001, and I was at a small, little, tiny police department in Central Florida. And the start-out pay was $7 to dispatch. Yeah. And I remember thinking, oh, I mean, that's good. And the area that I lived in, you know, the cost of living wasn't that high or anything. So it was good enough. But, you know, 3.5 years in, towards the time where I ended up ending my dispatch career there, not full career, but just ending my stint there at that police department and moving back home to Southwest Michigan, to then end up working at a different center for the county that I grew up in. I think when I left Florida, I was making $9 an hour. So I had stayed like that for a long time. And then when I switched over to Michigan, I think the start out there was like $15 or $16. And I thought, wow, like this is different. But also a big difference too, though, was the amount of phone calls that we mm-hmm. were getting. Oh, man. That just like bumped it up like crazy.
You earn that pay.
Yes. Yeah. You definitely earn it. But I was just curious how that, how it was, or the year it was that it started out, because mm-hmm. I started out around 7 as well during that time. So things have definitely changed
yes.
since then, right?
So thank goodness.
From 99 mm-hmm. and also my, you know, 2001, a lot has changed, especially with technology.
For sure.
Now, before we get to that part, though, I want to learn a little bit more going into, you know, the beginning of your dispatching. Now, you don't remember a lot about the training, right? So, you know, what were some of the things that maybe surprised you? Was there anything?
I think one of the big things that stuck with me, and it's, you know, it's still something that we deal with, is nobody knows where they are.
Yes.
You know, people could live in the same place for 20 years and that emergency hits and it's gone. They don't know what their address is or what intersection they're at, or, you know, it's something that stuck with me. Not everybody can handle emergencies. We're a special breed that we can stay calm when shit hits the fan. So not right. everybody can.
You know, but sometimes, at least from my experience, what I found out was, you know, even some of the officers that I worked with, now this would be in Central Florida, one of the officers that I worked with there, there was an accident that he was involved in, and he was off duty, and a teenager was driving and ran a stop sign and T-boned him, but he was fine. He ended up getting out of the car and he was checking on the kid and stuff, but he called in and it was right on the county line. So it ended up coming to, you know, to me anyway, but I get the call, and his sister, who was also a police officer, was standing next to me. And I had said to her, I was like, it's your brother. He's on the line right now. And he's talking, and he did not know who anybody was that he was talking to, myself or his sister, where he was at. Everything was just gone. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that I guess it happens with when people call in, you know, and they're under all that pressure for an emergency call and stuff. But it was interesting, because when he ended up showing up to the police department later on to talk to us about it, he's like, I had no idea it was you guys. Even when you said your names, it didn't even register. He's like, it was gone. I couldn't see or hear anything. It was the craziest thing.
Yeah. The heat of the moment.
Right. Yeah. So in the department that you worked at, or the center rather, how many people worked at a time, and then how big was the area? Cause you said there were how many deputies?
800 deputies.
800. On the oh my God. Yeah.
So we handled 5 contract cities plus the county. Mm-hmm. And in that area, we had a national forest, a national park, and it was north of LA. So it's a big area.
Oh, and man.
So we would run, I think at the time we'd have 4 or 5 people call taking, and then I want to say 2 or 3 radio And then we would rotate. We'd work 12-hour shifts, so we'd rotate between every few hours between radio and phones. So
and cross-trained. You did all three disciplines then?
Yes. When I moved to Colorado, I did all three. But when I worked in California, I just did law enforcement.
Just law enforcement. Okay. So see, and that's one of the interesting things too, is talking to folks who do one or the other, you know, just law enforcement or everything. But then also you throw in those who only do medicals. Mm-hmm. And some of the folks that I've spoken to that only do medicals, I always tell them like, man, I got to commend you because I did fine. I did great on medicals and stuff, but it's not something that I think I could do all day for 12 hours, just medical, yeah. medical. Like, give me a bank alarm. Give me a domestic. Give me, you know, disorderly in progress or something. Throw me on main radios when there's a chase going on, whether it be on foot, on car, chasing motorcycle, whichever.
Mm-hmm. I was the same way.
I would not be able to do medicals for that long. So any of you out there who are watching and listening, if you only do medicals, well done. I commend you because that would be hard, man. Like, yeah. I don't know. I almost feel like, and maybe it's just because they're medicals, but I feel like there's might be more, a little more heartache with some of those medicals because some of the calls that are coming in.
Yeah. And you got the kids or the seizures or the heart attacks. Yeah. Those were always tough ones.
Yeah. Those are very tough. And then, you know, they're tough alone because, you know, they're younger kids and stuff who are calling in and such. But if you have kids as well, then it doubles even more. Then when you get home, you're like holding on to your kids and they're like, you're squeezing me too hard. What is going on? You're like, I just love you.
Yeah.
I had a hard day at work. I love you.
Been there.
Yes. So, you know, with everything that you did in dispatch, and I've asked a few people this throughout all the episodes, but what was your most favorite to do? Now, and what I mean favorite is like phones, answering phone calls coming in or being on main radio with law enforcement. Like what was your jam? Like what was the one thing that you really enjoyed doing when you were in dispatch?
Well, I was lucky when I moved out to Colorado, I ended up starting with a person that became my best friend. We've been best friends for 21 years now. Mm-hmm. And we were the primary night shift dispatchers, the two of us. And boy, did we get into trouble.
Oh.
And, but law enforcement radio, when I started out was my thing. Give me a good chase. Give me a good bank robbery. I was all over that. Loved it. Or even with the call handling, if it was a good law enforcement type call, I enjoyed those too. But yeah, I loved a good night of night shift debauchery on the radio.
I love that. Make a t-shirt out of that night shift debauchery. Midnight shift was my thing as well. Except for a 3 to 4 month stint on mornings when I had been promoted to supervisor, it was all midnights. And I mean, all of the crazy stuff happens on midnight shift, mm-hmm. especially when that full moon hits.
Oh yeah.
And then someone says the word quiet.
Oh.
At the same time, then it's, you know, even more crazy, you know, stuff that's going on there. But, you know, friends and family would, they didn't understand, you know, no. they would ask, you know, how's work been going? Like, yeah, it's been kind of slow. And then they'll say, well, isn't that a good thing? That means people aren't in trouble and they don't need help. I'm like, yeah, but the point of my job is to help people. So I'm not wishing anyone to go through a bad time. I just want to get a phone call so I can help someone because that's my job. That's what I'm there for. And then they understood, but you know, sometimes they would just be like, oh man, you're a jerk.
Actually like, makes the night go faster.
Right.
Yeah. And I used to say, you know, the drunks were a better class of people sometimes because they were nicer to you than the report call during the day. And I'll take a drunk all night calling in stuff.
What are some of the ones that you remember from the intoxicated folks?
Oh, you know, there's been, can't think, well, one that I can mention that we've had recently, you know, mm-hmm. so many calls over the years are hard to remember, but we had a good one recently where a guy was walking home. He said, I was trying to do the right thing and walk home, been at the bar all night, been walking for hours, and it was cold. It was in Ohio, and he broke into a business to use the phone, and he says, I'm fully confessing I committed a B&E because I'm freezing. Oh. And just going off on, you know, just totally confessing to all these felonies he was committing, and it was pretty entertaining.
Wow.
Just because he was cold.
Man, you know, I mean, being cold, obviously it'll turn someone to do that, to get on the phone. I remember a few people who would call in, and the same thing, they were trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to walk home. And it's funny because this was during wintertime as well. And it was like blizzard out, but the bar was still open. So people were there, and this guy started walking, but ended up going back, and he called, and he asked for an officer by name. And this was in the city. And he goes, can you have Officer so-and-so come and pick me up to take me home? And I remember saying, sir, I mean, they're not a taxi. Like, if they can go, you know, then they'll go. I mean, I'll get a hold of him and see if he can do that. But they don't just do that. It's not a taxi service. And he's like, just call him. He knows me. He knows me. And I said, okay, I'll try. So then I had gotten hold of the officer afterwards, and he's like, no, we're not going to do that. So, you know, the guy ended up calling back, and I told him, like, he can't go. Well, then a few minutes after that, the officer keys up on the radio, and he goes, I have one in the vehicle with me. I'm giving him a ride home. And I thought, dude, you just told me to tell him no, and you picked his ass up anyway. And then the guy kept calling back after that. And it's like, well, I can't tell him no because you're going to do it.
Yep. Always getting calls for taxi service from the bar. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he made it home safe, and everyone else did too, which was fine. But it was just funny because, you know, the officer had already told me no. So I tell him no, and then he picks him up. I'm like, all right, well, next time I'm just going to tell you to go get him.
Yeah, we had a crazy night where she wasn't she wasn't drinking, she was high. Mm-hmm. Was walking around naked, so they hooked her up, and one of the officers gave her a jacket to cover her up. Well, they walked away from the car, and she shimmied her skinny butt through the partition, got into the front of the car, and drove off in the patrol car.
So oh, no way.
Night, yeah, and started pulling people over.
She was pulling people over? Oh, no shit.
Oh, man, the grief that poor officer got for years.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah, that was a fun night. Oh, the calls, people calling on 911 going, you're not going to believe me, but yeah. I just got pulled over by this naked chick.
Oh, that is superb. I think that might be a first for this show. I might have to take this out as a clip and play it during Open Mic Live, because that is hilarious. That is funny stuff. Oh, man. So looking back on your time in dispatch, well, actually, before I get to this part, so you were on the line. Did you ever, you know, in your 11 years in dispatch, did you move up to like supervisor or like a CTO, like a trainer or anything like that? Or were you on the line for the whole time?
Yeah, I was a trainer. Mm-hmm. I started training after about 4 or 5 years. Love training. That has always been my favorite thing. And then when I transitioned over to Entrato, I trained here as well.
What were in dispatch, what were, you know, some of the, I guess, decision factors that went into you wanting to move up to be a trainer? And the reason I ask is because a lot of people that I've spoken to that have gone up to be trainers and such was due to one of two things with their own training. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess it's kind of 50-50, you know, they had, for example, you know, a really good trainer, and it really pushed them to want to be like that trainer and train those who were coming up. Now, on the other side of that coin, their training wasn't that great. They made it through. It was a struggle. It was hard, and they weren't treated that great, but they made it through. And they wanted to become a trainer so that those moving up would not have to go through what they went through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, learn a different way. So there's a couple different, you know, things there. And I mean, you know, others just, they dig training. So they just want to do it. So that's why I asked. I was just curious, yeah. was there something that happened that made you want to be a trainer as well? Or you just kind of fell in love with the, you know, not only, you know, the profession and what it was that you were doing, but also to mold those that were coming in?
And I don't think I had anything traumatic that happened when I was in training. I remember a little bit when I started in Colorado, I had great trainers. But my thing is, if I see a problem or something that can be improved, then I want to improve it. Mm-hmm. And I saw that with the high turnover of how can we improve our processes to help people feel more comfortable when they're starting off. So I came up with a couple, like doing a 2-week orientation classroom before they hit the floor of, you know, learning the basics from people that are coming in with zero 911 experience to learn things before that we throw them out on the phones or hit the radio. So me, it was, I think, more of a, I saw a way of making improvements and I wanted to help the team out in that way. And I just loved, you know, sitting with people and watching those light bulb moments when things started to click for them. Those were always the best.
That is good, right? It's like, it's almost like, you know, Christmas time when you give a present to someone and you see that they're opening it and their eyes light up and you're like, oh, I did that. Like, you know, I contributed to that. And it's the same thing, you know, when you're training someone to do something and you're right. You know, for a period of time when I was in dispatch at the last center that I was at, we were so short staffed that we brought on 9 people to train and everyone became a trainer. Like, because we were trying to get people through, because up until that point, we were getting forced over for shifts. Even a week or two before, we were already getting forced for that overtime because that's how short staffed we were. So we were trying to get as many people trained and everything and as fast as possible. So everyone became trainers. And when you see that person, you know, it's, you know, in the beginning, they're having an issue and they're like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Like, no, you got it. You can do this. Just take a deep breath. I'm here with you. You know, you can do this. And then when they do it right that first time, when it finally clicks, you're like, yes, it's like, I knew it. I knew you had this.
Those are the best.
Mm-hmm. Those are excellent, excellent moments, especially when you're hooked up to them with the umbilical cord.
Yep.
And they're taking a certain call and you can tell that they're kind of nervous, but you're like, just breathe, just keep going. You've got it. And they get through it and they turn to you and have that smile on their face. And you're like, see,
yep,
you did it. Well done.
And now I don't think people realize how hard it is to train when the temptation sometimes to push them out of the way and take over and you have to hold back, let them struggle through. But
I've mentioned this one a lot of times, but I say it because it really helped me. When I was training at the last center, I was taking a domestic call and it's just screaming going on in my ear. And I'm trying to type into this old CAD system. And with that system, you had to have the incident type, the ORI, and the city or county code in there before you could even start typing in the narrative for like the main CAD call. If you put it in as a what was called a quick call, where it didn't have any information, you just threw in the address and a little bit of narrative, it would throw it in there, but you still had to enter the other stuff. Sometimes we would do that to make it faster so that the officers who were going out there would see it on their screen first. Mm-hmm. But with this one, I had gone in for a regular complaint and I was trying to type it in. And for whatever reason, I could not get in the domestic incident type code, which was DOME, but I kept putting in DOM. And I remember I covered the mouthpiece and I said to my trainer, you're going to have to take this over. And she's like, no, I'm not taking it over. You've got this. You can do this. And again, I've said this one many times, but I say it because it helped me for later on when I was done. She said, see, you did it. You were able to do it. All you had to do was step back for a split second, gather yourself, and you got it in there. And that helped me to be able to train others and do it. But you're right. it's hard not to just jump right in. Even now, when I've gone to visit people at my old center, mm-hmm. and I hear the phone ringing, I'm like just standing there listening to it. And one of the girls who was on my team when I was still there, she's now the deputy director. And she was standing there and she was watching me. I didn't realize she was watching me, but her name is Whitney. And she goes, Ricky, you want to jump in, don't you? And I was like, yes, I do. I was like, I do. I want to jump in and help out. She goes, well, it's still the same stuff if you want to jump in. I was like, I'm really rusty. I'll jump on the radio, but yeah, that'll be about it. But
yeah. And I think one of the best things I remember being told is their emergency doesn't mean it's your emergency. Take a beat and handle your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, a lot of people would say, you know, how is it? And I want to ask you as well, you know, how do you stay calm, you know, during the phone call? And I would tell them that I might sound calm, cool, and collected, but with certain calls in the back of my head, I'm freaking out with the caller too. But my job is to keep them calm, mm-hmm. Because if my voice goes up an octave or I get loud or something, they're going to freak out, and then I'm going to lose control of the call, and it's going to screw it up. With just the tone of your voice, you can change how that call is going to go.
Yeah.
And so for you, you know, what were some of the ways that that you were able to stay calm and get through a lot of those calls?
You know, I'm not 100% sure how I did it sometimes. It was just
magic.
It was just what you had to do. I mean, mm-hmm. like you said, if you escalated, they escalated. So I think it was easier to be calm and keep the call going mm-hmm. than to freak out. And I remember I had one call where I did one childbirth call in my career, and the line got disconnected about halfway through going through EMD. And I remember when it got pulled, the QA person was like, that is the fastest I've ever heard anybody redial a phone number, and got back in. But I'm shaking going through the cards because I've never done it before. And, mm-hmm. but you know, you got to stay calm and help them out. And it's just what needs to happen. And then you can go on break for a few minutes and go freak out in the break room after.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You finish a call like that and you're like, holy shit. Like, I can't believe that just happened right now. And a lot of calls are like that. And towards the end of my dispatching career, I'd gotten into a lot of like yoga and meditation and stuff. So like breathing techniques were things that I started doing during calls so that I could remain calm. And it really, really helped out because I didn't feel a lot of that pressure and stress as well, because I was kind of breathing through it. And man, if I could go back in time to tell myself what I know now, I would say start doing that right away, because it'll definitely help you out, especially with those medicals that are coming in and kids are choking and all you hear is because the mom or dad is slamming the hell out of their back.
Yep.
And through our protocols, you're like, no, you're not supposed to do that. You're going to hurt them more than help them. And oh man, some of those, those are some crazy ones. Oh, I got chills.
But when we started, breathing techniques were not a thing. I think it's great that the stuff is out there now with breathing techniques and the yoga and meditation. But when we started, that wasn't a thing.
Yeah, when we started, it was pull up your pants and just
suck it up.
Suck it up. Go to the next one. Mm-hmm. There was never any, and I don't know how it was for you, but for me, there was never any talk of, you know, this is how you should take care of yourself. It was nothing like that. It was like, you're coming in to do your job. Mm-hmm. Like that human connection wasn't really talked about. And I think it's good, especially now in the last few years when it really started coming out, was having that human connection. Cause then, you know, even though emotions are high and everything, you're able to relate with the caller and the caller can relate with you, which makes it so much easier to get more of that information out, because you know, people are calling for help, but if you sound, you know, shitty right off the bat in the beginning when you're answering,
doesn't help.
Yeah, that doesn't help at all. But with that connection, you know, they're more forthcoming with a lot of that information than other people would. They're putting all that trust into your voice.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing.
Just using their name, you know, Jim, Jim, I'm here to help you. My name is, and making that personal connection, it helped me on calls more than I can count.
Oh, man. If you, before we get into, you know, the transition from where you were at to now with Entrato and such, if you could go back in time to tell yourself stuff that you know now, you know, in the beginning of your career in dispatch, what would you go back and tell yourself?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I definitely reached a burnout point and I stopped dispatching. I had a 3-year-old at the time working night shift, working 10, 15-hour shifts. That stuff like the yoga and the meditation and the counseling that's available now and PTSD support and, you know, seek those things out, seek support from your coworkers. They're going through the same thing. Might not have burnt out like I did towards the end of my 11 years of dispatching. Mm-hmm. I had to take a break from it for a little bit, but.
What was it that, that helped you, I guess, kind of reignite that flame? And I ask because when I was at the last center, where I ended up finishing my career and stuff, about 6 years into being at that center, I too hit a burnout. And like, I loved what I was doing. It was just the environment, the county politics. I won't go there, but all of that, it sucked. It was real bad. You know, the morale was down and you know, you're in there with people for, like you were saying, about 16 hours sometimes, depending on, you know, for us, we worked all 12-hour shifts. And if somebody called in, it easily turned into a 16-hour shift. The longest I ever worked was 18 hours straight there. Yep. And the only good thing, though, however, was that it was Christmas Eve. So we were getting paid double time and a half. So that was the good thing. Yeah. However, I would have rather, you know, slept and spent the time with my family, but I had a job to do.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's how we ended up doing it there. But
yeah, the job is, you know, this job is more than a job. It's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it becomes who your friends are, how you sleep, just it becomes all consuming, and that can be hard.
Definitely. Now, so you ended up going through you know, your career and all there in dispatch. And then, oh, you know what? Going back here really quick before we start the next part, the way that I got my my groove back, for lack of a better way to put it, reignited my love for 911 was, for me, it was just doing a bunch of projects. So I went back to school and I started doing a bunch of projects. This podcast started as a project in school. In college, and just doing a bunch of things with 911 is, for me, what helped me get back into it and get past that burnout stage. But for you, you know, you ended up going kind of into that burnout and everything, and then you got back into it. What brought you back?
You know, I went and took a break for about 5 years and worked for the courts. And it was interesting talking to people that you normally talk to on the phone, talking to them in person. It was very interesting. And I was bored. I was so bored doing it. And, you know, you don't get the adrenaline rush like you do with 911 and being involved in everything that's going on. So I wanted something where I could move up and promote. That's something that I always wanted to do. So I wanted to be in 911, but I didn't necessarily want to start over at a PSAP and work my way up again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being in the industry, I knew about Entrato and sought them out for a position once I was ready to come back into it.
Now, for those who are watching and listening who might not know, because there's a lot of people actually in the general public who listen to this podcast as well, to learn more about dispatch and what it's like in dispatch and taking calls and such and just all of it, all of the above. Who is Entrato and what do they do?
Entrato is a big company. I work for the Life and Safety Division in Longmont, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And we are behind the scenes of 911. We have our hands in over half the 911 calls that happen in the U.S. and Canada, whether that be technology support services or where I work in the emergency call relay center. So what my center does is calls that are not routed to the PSEP as they should be for whatever reason, that be a provisioning error, technical difficulties, or a network overload, they are designed to come to our center in Colorado, and then we will get the basics of where the caller's at, their phone number, their name, what's going on, and then transfer them to the correct PSEP. And we do about 20,000 calls a month, transferring all over the U.S. and U.S. territories.
Oh, man. So I paused for a moment there because all I can think about is what we were talking about before, you know, all the different calls that are coming in and such. But there was one thing that you had said as well in the beginning, before we started recording, was that a lot of times some of these calls don't come in with a location. Mm-hmm. So already, if you're thinking just dispatch, you know, there's a lot of different stuff that, that can be used now for those. But you're in a spot who's taking calls from all over the place. So it's not just one concentrated spot. If you're in a county, they don't know where they're at. You can kind of narrow down where they're going to be depending on landmarks and this and that. Mm-hmm. However, this way, they're coming from all over the United States, right? It's not just in the state of Colorado. It's all over the place. So how much more stress does that add when you're taking calls like that?
Yeah. I mean, I would say about 95% of the calls that we get do not have a location. We do not have an alley like you would get on a normal 911 screen. So, you know, we've got to work with them. It may take a little bit longer, but we can go with a basic of a city and a state. We can use a lat and long, but we have to know at least what city and state that they're in to get them connected. Right. And we may need to do a couple transfers after that once the local dispatcher can work with the landmarks that they're giving us. But yeah, it's hard. We have to try to work out some kind of location from the callers to get them to where they need to be.
Oh man. So you're a supervisor at this spot here with Entrado, and it's the ECRC, or the Emergency Call Relay Center. How many people are working at a time? And are you on the line taking calls as well, or are you just kind of overseeing everyone who are taking these calls in this relay center?
So I do help out with calls every once in a while, if need be. But we run during the day 5 or 6 people, and at night, 2 or 3, depending on staffing and what our call loads look like. We definitely try to staff heavier for holidays, 4th of July, New Year's Eve. You follow the fireworks and gunshot complaints across the country, start on the East Coast and just ride it across to the West Coast.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, because of the time change and everything, you know, you're, especially with like New Year, I'm sure when that hits as well, you know, it's just all over the place.
Yeah, starting at 10 o'clock our time, and it just starts going. I think we had more gunshot victims and fireworks calls this year, but which was a little strange. It was kind of quiet this year. But
you said the Q word.
Yeah, I did. it's very interesting to see what's going on all over the country when there's a weather event or a mass casualty event or something. We get a feel for things that are going on across the country.
Wow. I can imagine that, let's just say for example, in, out in Kentucky, you know, recently they had all of these big storms, you know, one night, it was just multiple tornadoes and everything. Mm-hmm. Now, when storms and such like that happen, do you see that you get an uptick in a lot of calls that are coming into the relay center?
Absolutely. I worked Hurricane Harvey as a call taker, and, you know, dispatch centers, you know, get flooded out as well. So, I mean, that was crazy with people on their roofs calling for help, and you couldn't always get a call through. We do have phone numbers for primary PSAP, secondary PSAP, state police. We're going to get the call through somehow, but it just may not be as local as we want, depending on what's going on in the area. But, you know, Hurricane Harvey, they were even telling people to try to get on Facebook or Twitter to tell law enforcement where you were for help. It was that bad with the flooding. We worked Hurricane Ida recently. We had calls come in from the Hawaii missile scare in 2018. We had 800 calls in 30 minutes come in.
Holy crap.
Yeah. People wanting to know if it was real and people wanting to know if they were going to die. That's very hard to handle, call after call of people in tears wanting to know if they're going to die.
Jeez. Okay. So for those who are watching and listening, there are times when there are mass incidents that are going on mm-hmm. that, let's just say, for example, it's a huge pileup accident on the highway going on in one county. Well, they have another county, a surrounding agency, who will be their overflow of those calls. If they can't get to them in a certain time, someone is going to answer them. So it might go to, you know, a surrounding county mm-hmm. and they get the call and they'll get the information or they'll transfer the call back. So if it's overloaded, it goes to a different county. Now, for you, Rachel, for your center that you're working at, how does that work? Like, if you are getting 800 calls in 30 mm-hmm. minutes, if you are the overflow, where does it go? Does it just continue cycling until you guys get through all of them?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, that's hell.
Yeah. And we're, you know, it's what we're here for. Yeah. The system is designed to send these overflow calls to us if the network is overloaded mm-hmm. so we can handle them. And we will work with the local agency of, hey, we're getting these calls coming in. How do you want us to give you all these calls? Because not all of them are going to be live callers. A lot of them are going to abandon because people will, if they're not getting through, they'll hang up and they'll keep calling over right. and over and over again. So you have to process a lot of abandons, or they may even give up if they're not getting through. But we'll work with the local agency, say, hey, we've got all these calls. How do you want us to give them to you? Do you want us to keep transferring them? Do you want us to give them in batches, email them to you, fax them to you? How do you want us to help you? So we do that, especially if it's a weather event with something like trees down where everybody's calling 911 because of trees down or power lines down. We'll help them triage the calls.
Wow. That's pretty stressful. That's pretty intense. How does it work for, like, you know, I guess a fire or medical or something where, you know, when you're in dispatch, you've got those seconds and you're getting all of that. But now for you all at the relay center, if something comes in like that, mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to get all the information as fast as possible, but let's just say it's like, you know, someone who's visiting and you're trying to get information from them. I can't imagine how you end up feeling from that point because there's nowhere close. There's no landmarks that you would know, you know, how that would go down.
Yeah, it gets interesting. And we do get like fires. There's one area of the country, particularly during the summer, there's a lot of fires and we end up getting overload calls for them. And we will first one through to the dispatch center saying, hey, we've got report of this fire. And they'll say, yeah, we're already on the way. So anybody else that's calling in will say, hey, they've got fire department on the way already, unless they either have firsthand knowledge of what's going on or still want to talk to dispatch. So we're not continuing to overload them.
Yeah.
By continuing to transfer these calls, we'll triage them.
I think that's one of the good things about people, everyone having a cell phone now. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times we're like, oh man, everyone's got a cell phone. Everyone's calling in for this one accident. And then you're like, oh yeah, we got that one already. Or do you have any other information? Yes, we got that. We're getting people already heading out there. But in your case, I think that helps out even more because when you have so many people who are calling,
yeah.
Once you find the right place, you know, they, like you said, you know, they've already got that information. So if there's any more overflow or anything that you end up getting for the relay center, you're able to tell them, unless something new, of course, there's more information, but otherwise I think, you know, in that sense, it seems like it would help a lot more.
Yeah. Kind of take a little bit of the pressure off of the system for sure. Mm-hmm. Everybody with a cell phone is going to call it in for a while. So,
right.
We can help them out.
Yeah. So what is some more of the important work that comes out of the ECRC?
Well, we handle a lot of interesting calls. We handle voice over internet protocol mm-hmm. calls, wireless. One of our favorites is satellite calls. Satellite calls don't route usually to the local 911 system because of the technology. They are designed to default to us. Mm-hmm. So we handle, I believe, 4 or 5 satellite companies. And those are very interesting calls because people that are using satellite phones, they're usually in the backcountry hiking or they live in a very remote area. So you're working with Latin lungs to try to, if they've got them, or you're working with, hey, I parked at this trailhead 2 hours ago. I headed west, and just trying to narrow down where people are in these remote areas. We even get calls from boats off the coast, airplane crashes, things like that. So,
oh man,
there's some very interesting calls that come in. We also handle telematics calls. So we handle accidents for Verizon Telematics. Mm-hmm. So when an accident happens, the system will automatically connect to us. People don't have to dial 911, and we're in the car with them at the when it impact happens. So you're hearing people screaming and crying and the chaos of the accident before people even have a chance to dial 911 sometimes.
Oh, geez. See, and that to me, that makes me think of when I was in dispatch. We had an older phone system. So if you picked up the handset during that first ring, that the speakerphone would kick in and that's all you would hear. If it was something like that, that's all you would hear is just screaming and screaming mm-hmm. and screaming. And everyone was already at alert. And if you're the one who's answering the phone, you're like, oh shit, here we go. So yes. Sometimes we would hit the button and then pick up the handset. But, you know, a lot of times you just pick it up and there it goes. It's all yelling and screaming. But here for you, though, you know, at least for me, it might be coming from a landline, you know, so I've got the information or whatever. But even with the cell phone, it might be, you know, phase one, well, which isn't that great. Phase one, just right off the tower. But phase two, at least I can triangulate, you know, to get something.
Right.
But you've got it coming from the car and you have people that are just screaming and screaming. And I feel like almost immediately you would feel just kind of helpless because you're trying to get through to that person to get whatever information that you can from them at the time.
And what's great about these telematic systems though is it'll come through usually with a location and tell us what kind of car they're in, tell us who is the primary account holder, and we have information on them. So even if we can't, you know, sometimes they can't hear us in the car or there's just so much going on with bystanders talking to them, or we can still connect over to the dispatch center and say, hey, this is what I got, this is where I'm showing them, this is what I'm hearing.
That's good.
Connect them in.
That's really good because, you know, in an accident, if for some reason, you know, it ends up going one way instead of two way, you know, all you hear is them mm-hmm. and the, you know, the microphone piece is jacked or the speaker or whatever. And they can't, like you were saying, they can't hear you. If it's because of the accident, at least you have that to go off of and the extra information that's there to be able to relay. So that, that is good. That is very good. I'll be honest, sometimes I do feel a little jealous when I talk to people on this podcast because they're telling me about this awesome technology and how they're using it. And I sometimes wish I was back so that I could use it as well. But, you know, the long hours and those county politics, I don't know.
Yeah, we got some, it's nice working at Entrato with all the different technology and things that that happen and just getting a feel for the country. And we got mm-hmm. nice little perks like a cafe and have breakfast and lunch. And
that sounds pretty awesome.
Stuff like that. Yeah. We've got a brand new center that was just built for us. Everybody's got their own desk. We don't have to share like at a piece up. Everybody can decorate and do what they want in their own space. And it's pretty nice.
That is pretty awesome. As we go into the wrap up of this episode, it has been awesome to have you on and learn more about your story, especially everything that goes on at the ECRC, the importance of it and all. You know, what is something that you would like people to, I guess, to know more, not just about the ECRC, but, you know, I guess about you, you know, kind of making that transition, you know, going through that burnout and everything, and then jumping back into, you know, public safety. You know, any advice for, I guess we'll start with that. Any advice for those who are out there that have gone through a burnout and who are wanting to get back into public safety, but I guess maybe just don't know how.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, there's not many people that can do what we do. We're a mm-hmm. special breed that can handle emergencies the way that we do and not have closure on calls. And I think that's part of the stress too, is we don't always know what happens, especially in a center like mine now, we never know what happens because we're handing the calls off to other people. And I would say if you got that burnout, don't be afraid to talk to people. a lot of places have psychologists or counselors on staff now. Don't be afraid to talk to them. Talk to a coworker. Talk to your family. Just share. Talk it out. And, you know, if you need to take a break, you need to take a break. But I think there's a lot of services that are available to help. And I think there's more and more knowledge about what we do now that we're being included with, you know, like debriefs. Before, it was just maybe the first responders would get a debrief, and now 911's being included in that, which is great. So, but don't be afraid to talk it out. And everybody hits that wall at some point in their career, but you're a special person that can do this job, and boy, it's needed because people are short-staffed everywhere.
Right. And it seems like a simple concept, right? Just listening to you say that, just reaching out to people. But we're the best at communications, but when it comes to communicating with each other,
not so much. Because you want to be tough. You want to be like, I got this. But sometimes that, you know, it's, don't be afraid to ask for help, because that you're still strong asking for help.
Right. And in you asking for help, that might help somebody else. You know, they see or hear that you asked for help, and they realize it's okay, and that they're not alone, that they're not the only ones that are going through, you know, some issues or whichever, and they'll end up helping too. So that's a good thing. How can people find out more about you or the ECRC and the importance of Intrados ECRC?
I would ask people to check out intrado.com. And you can Google ECRC at Intrado, and there's a blog post that has some information about what we do. And we're going to be putting out a little video here shortly on LinkedIn and social media about the ECRC. And I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to hit me up, Rachel Hine. And if you want to ask any questions about Intrado and what we do, I would encourage you to send me an email, rachel.hine at Intrado, intrado.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much again for being on this episode. This has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to having you on another one.
It'll Thank you. I appreciate it. This is great.
All right. I will be right back here with you in just a moment. And for those who are watching and listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is WTTpodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for any bonus content and you want to help support us, you can find us on patreon.com/WTTpodcast. Again, thank you, as always, to patrons. And as a patron, you get the perk of audio versions of Dispatcher's Roundtable, as well as Open Mic Live. There are other bonuses that you get in there, as well as swag, discounts to the store, t-shirts, and so much more that's going to be coming up as well this year for 2022. This episode has been sponsored by InDigital, as well as Rapid Deploy and Carbyne. And this can be seen on Facebook, as well as Twitter and YouTube. And then you can listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. We'll see you in the next one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.